again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Buses. The great one, Doug Tonis, and I head out onto the highways of Illinois with the big red, newly painted bus. How you doing, brother? It's an exciting time, huh?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to see that the description of the bus has shrunk with each episode. I think we can eliminate the description going forward. You know, just kind of get right into the good stuff.
I thought you meant that the actual bus had shrunk. You mean, as I described the actual
bus
vehicle.
Is just as full, but you didn't spend 5 minutes describing how amazing it looked. Well, or how dilapidated, depending on the day.
You just wrote your future. I'm going to spend a good 10 minutes on the next one. Finally, the season is done, and what a season it was, and big surprise the Warriors win it all. Let's get your thoughts immediately just on that whole final series. I'd love to hear what you thought about, you know, the sweep for the Warriors.
Well, not much. I mean, we all knew going into it that the Western Conference Finals was the real finals, and as much as people want to complain about that and think, you know, it sucks that Golden State is so great and no one can beat them, I mean, if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, they probably, maybe not probably, but I think they maybe lose. So I think it's closer than people think, and this is, you know, similar to the Lakers-Kings days when you go back that far when it was just the Lakers and Kings would play in the Western Conference Finals and whoever got there was going to clearly win, the two best teams, and we're just kind of in that same situation. So the finals to me wasn't even remotely interesting whatsoever, and, but I still thought it was a fun season.
What about the next topic at hand, which everyone's discussing? What do you betting today? What do you feel the future of LeBron James is? Is he going to remain in Cleveland, or do you think he'll be somewhere else?
I bet somewhere else. I mean, LeBron, you know, historically, goes to where he has the most talent, right? So it would be stupid to bet against that. The couple times in his career where he was, you know, a free agent and was thinking about doing such a thing, he left. So I assume that will be his stance this time, and that he'll see what he can swing and what they can make happen. I would be very surprised if he is in Cleveland.
I agree. I mean, and I think the fan base should be somewhat a little bit more sympathetic, and if they're not, pound sand. I mean, you won him a title, that's all, as he promised, and if they're not smart enough to understand that this guy is, you know, his career is being defined by how many more titles he wins, then, you know, you can forget them. He's got to go to another team. Along those lines, I had a poll this week from at CBE Fred on Twitter, and I was kind of surprised at the results of the poll, and I'd like to get your opinion on this. So the poll was, assuming we could sign one of the following players below, what player would you prefer that the Bulls sign to a max deal? And the options were LeBron James, Paul George, Klay Thompson in 2019, and Jimmy Butler in 2019. Did you see this poll, and what would you have picked?
I did not see the poll, but I guess I would. It's a little tricky for me, but I think you have to go with LeBron James, and Klay Thompson a very close second. I might even say Klay Thompson first. I mean, I could get why someone would say that. You know, you would say, with LeBron James, we still don't have enough to win. He's 33. You know, it's probably not going to have enough to win before he retires. With Klay Thompson, you weaken the Warriors, who are the team you can't beat, and drastically weaken them, and then you've got, like, a longer amount of time that you can compete. All right, I talked myself out of it. I'm going to go with Klay Thompson instead.
How dare you? No, I don't. I think the answer is clearly LeBron James. I mean, if it's about winning the East, what player has
it's
done more?
It's not about winning the East. It's about winning a title. I don't care if we win the East.
Well, you're not going to win a title with Klay Thompson. Do you actually think Klay Thompson is going to bring you closer to a title than LeBron James?
Under the current context of weakening the Warriors, having the amount of time that you have in his career path left to be a legitimate contender, yes. I think Klay Thompson will get you closer to winning a title than LeBron James. Not because he's anywhere near the player. LeBron's clearly a much better player than Klay Thompson is. But LeBron also has fewer years left, and he's going to be declining in his greatness each of those years. And we're just not good enough. I mean, like, you need more time. I mean, you're probably ready to strike in like 4 years. You're not going to be ready to strike in 2 years.
Let me throw something out there. Do you feel that the Bulls today are better than the Cleveland Cavaliers sans LeBron James?
Maybe, maybe not.
I think
I
they
mean
clearly
today,
are.
right now, Kevin Love is still better than our best player today.
Barely.
And George Hill is probably better than our second best player today. I mean, it's like we have a lot
Come
of
on.
hope that these guys will get better, but right now, I think probably their cast would still be better than our cast.
I can't tell you
And
how much I
certainly he'd
disagree.
have no chance of winning the title with his cast in Cleveland. And we
No,
aren't
it's
markedly
awful.
better than them.
Yeah.
And we're not markedly better. I mean, if anything, maybe you want to say we're 2% better. It's not anywhere near better enough to win.
Not
So
yet.
no, it's just
Yeah, but
not a
Doug.
cast, and we don't fit. We don't fit next to him either.
Oh,
So
come on.
no, I don't think we'd have any chance of winning a title with LeBron in the next 2 years. And if I have to go 3 years out, I just would question what kind of LeBron you're going to get when he's, 35, 36, 37.
Well,
You know, he
Doug,
might be okay, might not be.
let me jump in here. First of all, I say right now, I think Lauri Markkanen is probably as good as Kevin Love. He's really close. It's really close. It's a toss-up. You want to say Love's a little bit better, yeah, but throw in everything else, big picture, with his propensity, Love's propensity to get hurt every 5 minutes, and I think most people would say Markkanen's right there and
Just
probably
an
tied
Iron
it up.
Man, didn't have back problems multiple times in his rookie year. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, not serious where he had to go under the knife. Those were all muscular. Come on, we all know. I understand what you're trying to say. We'll give it to Love. Dunn is one of the best. He's a better perimeter defender than anyone on that Cleveland team, anyone besides LeBron. And he's the point guard. Then you got LaVine at shooting guard, and then you throw LeBron at the three. You got Lauri and
Levine
Lopez.
and Dunn statistically last year were both wretched. They're
Oh
both
yeah,
terrible.
but
It's all one of
no,
those
no,
things
no.
where you look at them and you see the bright side and you see the hope and you hope they get better. But at their current state, their current level of play, if you go look at their advanced metrics, Levine was one of the worst shooting guards in the NBA, and Dunn was not a starting caliber point guard.
He
And
was
they don't have
defensively.
experience.
He
They
was
don't have
defensively.
experience. They don't have play of experience. It's just not. Like I said, I don't think they're a better team. I
There's
just don't. This is
not
a
an
team that just
advanced
won like
metric that tells you that Dunn is
mid-20s
not a good
games.
player. He's a fantastic defensive player. I understand what you're saying, that there, offensively the metrics there aren't really there yet. And that's fine. You
They're
don't need them.
terrible.
You
But
don't need them.
even not that. Just as like on-off numbers, his RPM, his VORP, like all the stuff that even tries to take into account defense and total impact on the court. Dunn's numbers are terrible.
Well, that's because of the I mean, you step back. Well, no, they're not terrible. I mean, he's one of the best as far as stealing the ball, which is a stat that I know is not quote unquote advanced, but something I like. He's top five. If he would have played six more games, he would have been top five in the league, qualified for that. And he's a very good perimeter defender, and the team sucked around him and defensively. And there's a lot of reasons why he had a rough year. He fell on his face.
Fine. There's plenty of reasons. I'm just saying, you can't convince me that the cast is way better than what Cleveland has without LeBron. If
Okay.
they're better, it's only a little bit. Now, they might improve to be much better because everyone's very young. They're
And they're
on
adding
that
the number
part of their
seven
career
pick.
upside that they could get better. But that's where I'm saying your time horizon is a few years from now. So let's just say that the seventh pick is whoever you get. Just say they become a really good player. Say
Okay.
they become an all-star, low-rung all-star caliber player. But it's going to take them 3 years to get to that point. It's
Didn't
going to
take
take
Tatum.
Lowry two more years to get to that point. And then you've got Dunn and Levine say these guys become good players, but it takes them another year or two to get to that point. Your team is going to be peaking in like 3 years when LeBron is really coming down, and there's really no guarantee you're going to have this like super top-notch talent. I just don't think you have enough to win with LeBron, particularly against the Warriors as they're constructed now. But you take Klay Thompson off the Warriors, and now all of a sudden, you're like one injury away from one of their main guys from really being able to defeat them. They won't have any room to add anyone to replace Thompson's impact, and that team will be much, much weaker. So the target is also much less by taking Thompson. So I don't know. That's my final answer. I get why you take LeBron. He's the second best player in the history of the NBA. It's hard to go against that. It all makes sense. I mean, I get what you're saying completely. It makes sense. I just wouldn't go in that direction, not because of LeBron's greatness or Klay Thompson's greatness, but just because of the way everything would line up.
Okay, fair enough. 46% took LeBron, 35%, a significant percentage chose Klay Thompson, and these are 300 votes, so it's a significant percentage of
Yeah,
the votes.
it's a decent number of people voting.
Yeah. So then, and then it was, this is what surprised me the most: Jimmy Butler at 10% and Paul George at 9%.
It's got to be like Homer votes for Jimmy Butler. I don't know why you would take Jimmy Butler over Paul George, like really even just comparing those two guys. I can't imagine taking either of them above the other two options. So
I agree.
I
Well,
get.
if you look at Paul George shot 40% from three last year. He's, arguably just as good, if not better, defensively. He made an NBA All. So did Jimmy, but I mean, they're really close. I understand it, but he's also, Paul George is a year younger. It's almost like a full year younger. So, yeah,
And
I think
also
you're
didn't just
right.
tear a meniscus, so you got that going for you too.
Right. Yeah, and Paul George, I understand, is not without an injury history either. But I agree with you. I like. If I think of players that the Bulls could immediately improve to contender status by adding, Paul George is one that comes to mind. Because I think he fits in exactly what this team needs. 3-point shooting, a guy who can play excellent perimeter defense and switch on anyone. And a guy who's got a history of playing in big games. What did you think if the Bulls signed? Well, let me ask you that question. Paul George gives indications, hey, I'd be willing to sign in Chicago for a max deal. Would you do it?
Obviously, no
Okay.
doubt, it's a no-brainer.
Oh, good. Well, yeah. And if he did sign, considering they're getting the draft pick, what would you, how would that team become a contender next year, or are they still probably 2 years away?
I don't think they're a contender. I mean, they'd be in the top couple teams in the East, depending what happens with LeBron. It'd be Boston, wherever LeBron goes, and the Bulls, I think, would be, there as the top teams in the East.
Okay.
So, they'd have a chance to come out of it, depending on where LeBron goes. If he goes to Philly, they'd obviously have a ton of talent, but I do kind of wonder how his fit in Philly would work out.
Agreed.
And I
Yep.
still have a lot of questions whether Embiid can stay healthy. I mean, everyone is just calling this guy the next greatest superstar, and he's an amazing player, but he's still only played in like 25% of his total possible games in the NBA. And for most of this season, they wouldn't play him in back-to-back games. So there's still like a lot of risk there, right? Like I'm clearly great player on the court, but there's a lot of risk there. So,
Agreed. Yeah.
Philly, even if LeBron goes there, they're like an injury away with, their two main star players. Both have had, significant serious injury problems in their career, and you'd only be an injury away from that team kind of falling back apart. So, that team has tremendous upside, but. Yeah, you could see easily how it could come crashing down for them easily too.
I agree 100%. You made a good point on Embiid too. Another thing that people aren't talking about Embiid is, a lot of the benefits of having these young guys is having them on these rookie deals, and he just wasted away all those years for the most part being injured. He's making a max deal basically almost next year. It's
Well,
like,
they actually got a much better deal on him though, but because of all the injuries and because he hadn't proven himself. He's signed actually below the 7-year max, which is way below the LeBron max. So he's actually on a tremendous value contract. So while that did maybe hurt what they could have done salary-wise for him if they had him on a very cheap deal, the deal he ultimately signed due to the injuries is actually now a tremendous value proposition for them if he stays healthy. So I think that did work out okay for Philly.
okay. Out of the teams that LeBron would go to, there's one more question about LeBron before we move on to the beloved. So you got Houston. I know you said this before, and I kind of agree with you. Looking at the Houston situation right now, how do you make that happen for him to go there? But let's just assume that, somebody is willing to take on a couple bad deals for assets, for the next 8 years, right? Is that the team you think if you dropped him on, you'd say that's the most likely team to beat Golden State? Well, I mean, if you had a bet, where's he going to be? Give me your top three for next year outside of Cleveland.
Well, I think Philly would be number one. I think Houston would be number one if there was a feasible way for them to do it. I just don't see what that feasible way is. But I'm gonna say that they're still number two out of some crazy back thing I can't even envision now happen. And then I'm going to say the Lakers are number three, only because they actually have the ability to get so much cap room, they might be able to sign three stars if they did everything correctly. And, you know, they might be able to pull off like a Miami-style situation. And I think that makes them a dark horse in this. You would need a very coordinated effort with everyone. And unlike Miami, they don't have one guy there already who would, like, definitely stay. But I think they have some potential, too.
Yeah, and they have some great young talent. I mean, I think Ingram quietly had a much improved year, you know, and Ball's clearly talented. Who knows how good he's going to be? But that is a good point. I mean, so they can absolutely sign two guys to max deals, right?
They do a little bit. I mean, they have some work to do. How bad does that Luol Deng signing look right now?
I know.
Because that's the piece that has them totally screwed.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they could get out of that signing, they would be in such great shape. And so they might stretch Deng and, like, wave and stretch him, and that'll save them, you know, a good chunk of the money. But, boy, if they could, they're even talking about, like, if they sign him to an extension and then wave him after the extension so they can spread it out over more years.
Like, oh my
kind of
god!
Things like that.
Are you kidding?
Like, save an extra couple million dollars. Like, that's actually a cap theory that might go down that way. You know, and I found it, you just kind of wonder. Like, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But that move killed them so much. They'd be in great shape if it weren't for that signing.
All right. So speaking of the Lakers, this is going to kind of segue into the beloved Bull. I was on with Waddle and Sylvie this week, and Waddle was coming out, had a point, or excuse me, with Sylvie, saying, hey, I want to hear of a potential free agent that the Bulls could get that you buy low on, who you could build up as instead of paying, you know, like a max deal for. And you know, I think one guy came to mind, and tell me what you think. 3-and-D guy, plays excellent defense, 38% three-point shooter. On the Lakers this year, unrestricted free agent, and he's 25 years old, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. What's your take? Do you like the kid? And would you sign him for the beloved?
I certainly think he would be a guy who could be a buy-low deal. There's not a lot of money out there. He's a guy who'd probably be worth more in a different set of circumstances than what he'll likely sign for. So I do think that's a good value signing. I don't know that I would sign him. You know, your problem now is every signing you make takes away your cap room from 2019. And so you have to think, like, if you draft a guy this year at 7, you know, who becomes a likely star player, and Lowry makes, you know, some really good steps, and we'll just say in the ultimate upside scenario that Dunn and Levine also play well, and because you and I are both the rose-colored glass optimists, the Bulls win 45 games this year, and they go into the offseason with max salary space. You're going to be a player for Klay Thompson or Kawhi Leonard. Now, Thompson's recently kind of come out and said, like, I'm going to stay with the Warriors even at a massive discount. So that might pull him off the table. It might change what I would do. But I would be awfully nervous if I signed Pope this season, and then that took me out of the running for the max guys next year, when my team will be a much better destination. And I don't think you need to add lots of good players to this team, or average to good players to this team, or good niche players to this team right now. You still need to figure out how to get star talent on this team. And it's unlikely that Lowry, to me, is going to be a big enough star to be a guy who leads you to a title as the number one option. It's unlikely that whomever they draft at number 7 is going to be a big enough star to lead you to a title as the number one option. And so, you know, until you have that kind of player, you really don't want to be clogging up your cap with guys who are the people you surround that player with, especially if it then limits your ability to bring that player on board. So I wouldn't hate the signing, because I think it'd probably be a good deal and probably be a smart thing to do, but it's one I'd probably hold off in the hopes of parlaying my cap space into something bigger in the following year.
Okay, so next question, which is kind of, again, parlays into this. Are you one of the guys out there? So the Bulls are going to have a significant amount of cap space if they don't sign anybody. It's just going to go unused. Would you prefer that they pull like what the Sixers did with J.J. Redick and almost kind of, I think, overpay for 1 year and then still have all that freedom for next year? But when in doing so, don't you make the team, better and then therefore potentially hurt your draft position for next season?
It's really kind of down to the interesting question. Are you worried about your draft position next season? Do you think your team is good enough that you're going to be in the lottery and potentially deep in the lottery? Because if you don't think your team is good enough to make the playoffs and you do think you're going to be so bad that you're in the lottery, then such a move is not a good idea. If you think your team is going to be a 40-plus win team, then you absolutely do something like that. Now, the counter argument I would have to that, and this is probably the stance I would take, and I would hope the Bulls take, is I'm not actually looking to sign a dude to help me this year. I'm looking to take on bad salary for a year, and to collect as many future draft assets as I can. I'd rather take the Fareed deal, where you get Kenneth Fareed and you move up from 22 to 14, and you eat like his $14 million in salary. To me, that's a better use of that cap space than signing, someone who's maybe a $15 million player to a $20 million deal, or say a $10 million player to a $20 million one-year deal, just to get a guy in here for a season. I'd rather use that money to try and secure some draft assets.
So the Fareed, does Fareed's contract end in 2019? So he's got one more year left on the deal. Does
Yeah,
he?
it just gets it's a common one floating around Twitter. It gets the Denver Nuggets out of the luxury tax, and so they have pretty heavy incentive to avoid that. Especially when you start looking at repeater tax and things like that, you don't want to barely be in the tax, and then now you come closer to triggering a repeater threshold for yourself, later on down the line if you can avoid it. And from their perspective, moving from 14 to 22, maybe that's a drop, but is that a drop that's worth, say, I don't know what it would end up being, maybe $18, $20 million, something like that for them? I think that's a good amount of money for them to save with this drop, and they'll probably still be a good player at 22. So, to me, that's a better move with the Bulls cap space than doing a Reddick-like deal.
So you think is that a likely or potential deal that's out there? I know I've heard a little bit of that, that the Bulls could trade 14, move up from 22 to 14, and take on Fareed for a year.
I mean, like I said, it's an idea fans have come up with. It's something that logically makes sense. The team's going to do it. Who knows? But I think there'll be other deals like that too. There'll be other deals where you can take on someone's salary and get maybe a pick in the 20s. To take on like 6, 7, 8 million, $10 million in salary. Say you just take on for each straight up, and they give you next year's draft pick. Top 15 protected, and then. You don't move up this year. To me, that's still a good deal. So, there'd be chances for things like that. Maybe it's not Denver, maybe it's someone else, but there will be chances where you take on someone's garbage and they give you a pick, and it's not going to be a great pick, but you get a pick for it. And I think those are the kinds of deals I would look for with what the Bulls have in room, rather than looking for, deals where you're trying to bring on someone for just a season to help this season.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because I thought what the Sixers did last year, I'm kind of, I would kind of counter that. Like, I'm a little bit different in that I think there is value in getting our young guys. And I differ with you in that I think we do have what it takes to win a title already here right now. If these guys can max out and achieve, kind of max out on their ceiling. And so in doing so, I think it's very important to make the playoffs and to do as well as you can. And adding, like, say, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for a one-year deal for $22 million is not a bad thing because that'll make you significantly better. He's a guy that you can just bring right in that wing rotation that's so important in today's NBA, and you're a better team. And you bring Holiday to the bench and have him start at the three. Pope start at the three. But I guess the big question is, where do you feel this team is at? And obviously, I'm a little bit more bullish than most people. But I think if we had to, put a vote to the fan base, I think the vast majority would probably be more in agreement with you that you would prefer maybe one more year where they get a high pick.
Well, I think they have a chance to make the playoffs. And I think if you did that one deal, you're probably going to get a guy who had, say, 2 or 3 wins. I just don't think that the movement is enough to justify giving up potential future draft picks. If this Golden State Warriors team stays together, you probably have 3 to 4 more years before you realistically have a chance to win anyway. Like, they clearly don't have enough talent, even if everyone maxes out, to beat the Warriors as they are put together now. Like, no matter what happens. So if you view it that way, you know, to me, I'd almost be a fan of trying to trade Dunn and LaVine and try and double down on getting more draft assets later. The only thing about that is I don't think you'd really get much in return for either guy. So you might as well roll with them and hope that they improve, because I don't think anyone else has given you, you know, major draft assets. You're not going to get top 10 picks for those guys. So well, at the point where you're getting like a 15th selection, it's maybe not so worth it.
Definitely not LaVine. Do you think LaVine is moving? This free agency situation with him is so interesting to me. I mean, do you feel he's going to be? I don't know if you're getting this sense too, but the more I'm reading, the more I'm feeling this out. I have a bad feeling that this is going to end up with him taking the 1 year, and you know, taking it from there. You know what I'm saying? Taking the 1 year qualifying offer.
You know, it could happen. It could happen. He's clearly not going to be happy with whatever the Bulls offer is, but the best way I think about LaVine in my head is, let's just say that we have cap room, so we could do this. How much would you offer Jabari Parker right now? Like, would you say this is a guy with huge upside who could be a big part of our core? Zach LaVine is our Jabari Parker. We're just hopeful. Like, there's no reason to think that Zach LaVine is going to be better than Jabari Parker. There really just isn't. But we're just hopeful, you know, because he's ours. So we're, like, emotionally committed in some way because it was the main piece we got back from Jimmy Butler. But as soon as you take one of these dudes who's in a similar situation, got injured, came back, didn't play well, I mean, and played really, really bad. LaVine played really terribly. And we're, like, looking at things like, well, but he looks good on the court and his release is good, and like, but none of the shots went in. But that'll come back. You know, like, you start, like, making up these types of excuses and – you know, you're just selling hope. I mean, you're selling hope. So, you know, I get why people can be hopeful on LaVine, but I get why someone else might say, hey, Jabari Parker's a really good player, and if things hit right for him, he can also be really good. And I don't bring this up to say if you like Zach LaVine, it's hopeless and he's going to be terrible, but I bring it up to say that, you know, there's a good chance he won't be so great. You know, there's a really good chance. And you just have to hope for the best with him on that contract. You don't want to pay him, though, a huge amount of money. You know, you don't want to lock in this guy at, like, $100 million. So you're going to play a little bit more conservatively. And to your point, it's not going to be that surprising if LaVine says, whoa, hold the phone. I don't want to lock in at this price. I'm going to be better than this. Also would not be surprising if he takes that bet and it works out fabulously horrible for him. And he completely destroys all his value. You know, so LaVine's got to be aware of that too, but, you know, it's a tough situation.
It is.
Any of these negotiations with guys who, like, if things go their way, they're worth the max, and if things don't go their way, they're worth, like, you know, $8 million. Those are always the worst negotiations to be in because there's no real happy medium for everyone. The player looks at the upside, the team looks at the downside, and it's really hard to meet in the middle.
Yeah. And what would you say, I mean, you're the GM, what would you sign him for? Be comfortable signing him for?
I'm not going over $15 million a year.
No, I agree. And I think that number's coming down, Doug. I really do. I think more and more people are going to be shocked at how low these salaries, some of these values are going to be. And I just keep on pointing to Lou Williams and $8 million a year. And Lou Williams had a fantastic season. I understand he's 31, right? That's a big part of it. But he was absolutely fantastic. He should have been an all-star. He signed for $8 million a year. And, you know, there's the same type of variables with LaVine. Hey, he's younger, sure, but he was terrible last year. He didn't have Lou Williams' season. You know, it's like I don't think you can expect, if you're LaVine's camp, to make much more than that.
Well, $8 million is really low. I mean, that's the mid-level exception.
Yeah.
It's going to get more than that.
No doubt. No doubt.
So,
yeah.
I mean, and part of it is the age. And part of it is that, you know, Lou Williams probably didn't sign the best deal, you know. So, I don't know. I don't think it's a comparable situation. I'm sure every team is going to try and use Lou Williams' deal to justify their low price tag to everyone else. But if it comes down to levels at that, you know, LaVine will clearly take the qualifying offer. I am warming up to the idea that the Bulls sign a 1-1, similar like with the deal they made with Mirotić. I think something like that is more likely than the qualifying offer, where they sign him to a 2-year deal with the second year being a team option at, like, say, $15 million a year. Mm-hmm. And then now if LaVine busts out, he's amazing, you know, the Bulls get him for another year at $15 million, which is really cheap, and LaVine isn't locked in for a super long period of time, you know, for 2 years, and then he can go get his max money after that. And then the 2-year total that he gets will still be similar to his 2-year if he signs for the qualifying offer and then signs for a max deal afterwards, because he will have taken such a low amount this year.
Yeah.
So it's a deal, something like that, ultimately is where the bridge can be made between the two, where, you know, the Bulls aren't taking a big financial risk. Zach is still betting on himself heavily, but is not going to lose more money and will guarantee him more in the short run if things go bad. So I think that's probably, if things don't work out in the long-term perspective, I expect the deal, more of that framework to materialize.
Decision probably going to go down, would you estimate? Do you think Zach's going to be closer to the beginning of the year, or do you think that's going to go down to, you know, near October?
It'll go down, I think, to the deadline for the qualifying offer. I don't expect that to get done unless one side is just really moves a lot towards where the other side is. We don't really know where the sides are now. Our presumption is that they're probably going to be far apart. We don't really know. You know, maybe the Bulls just come in at $18 million. And it's pretty much a done deal, you know, or maybe Zach is like, oh, yep, I'll sign for, you know, 14, and it's a done deal. So, you know, we expect there to be a pretty big gap based on what appears to be, you know, a large difference in how each side views the potential goings wrong of a deal. We would expect there to be a large gap, but it may be that one side is more reasonable than we expect.
All right, my brother. We're already over 30 minutes here. Brief episode today. After the next one, let's start getting in some of these prospects and really get a deep dive in some of these players. To wrap this baby up, I had one final question for you on Mo Bamba. There's a lot of talk about him moving up in the draft, a lot of love given to this guy. I know we've kind of talked to him at ad nauseum. Has there been anything that you've seen in the interim since our last conversation that has changed your opinion on him, or are you still pretty much where you were in the last cast?
You know, there's just been lots more publicity about him, and I think it really comes down to the guy is extremely, extremely intelligent. He's an extremely bright guy.
Yes.
And so I think all the reporters fall in love with him when they talk with him, you know, compared to maybe some of the other prospects. He's more interesting to talk to. He's a better interview. You know, just people like intelligent guys. And so I think that is, like, appealing for GMs, and it's appealing for the press, and so I think there's a lot of people falling in love with him. From his game perspective, I don't think anything's changed. I guess he's seeing the shot doctor. I don't know if you followed all of that stuff, and I don't know if the guy's actually called the shot doctor, whatever. The guy who fixed Jason Tatum's shot, and, you know, now is working with Fultz and all his guys, and is, you know, incredible, and blah, 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 and, you know, he said, oh, my shot is so smooth now, and all this other stuff. I kind of just don't think anything of that, because every year, every player talks about how they've been taking 5 trillion jump shots and the range is better. And, you know, it's just the same stuff every offseason. So, maybe he's better. I don't know, but I've seen him worked out. So why would I think anything different except from what I could see of his college highlights? You know, I have no reason for my opinion to change. Now, if he went into a Bulls workout and knocked down 90% of his threes and hit like 90 out of 100, then, yeah, they sure as heck want the guy, right? So the teams that are seeing him, you know, they have a view based on what they're seeing, and their views may change. But, you know, from my end, I still kind of think, you know, limited offense, some risk there, great physical body. You know, you're kind of rolling the dice on that he'll develop offensively. And if he does, he could really be tremendous. And if he doesn't, he'll still probably be a tremendous defender. You know, I don't think he's a super low downside pick. I think your worst-case scenario, he's a guy you can probably still anchor your defense. So, you know, I get why people are enamored with him. I know you hate him, and that you won't have to worry about it. He's not going to be there for the Bulls, and the Bulls aren't going to trade up. So it's not a conversation for Bulls fans to worry about.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you're probably right. Hopefully it won't be a decision that we'll have to make, and you know, we'll choose from other players, because I think it's a very difficult one for whatever team takes him. But, you know, I don't want to be right on this. I hope I'm wrong. He seems like a great kid. But I think you hit on it. I think people have fallen in love with his intelligence, and, you know, he's really good in front of the camera. And But I mean, like, people keep on sending these videos of him like hitting six straight. I've seen you hit six straight, Doug, from 3-point line. There's people I know.
And if I had, you know, a 7'9" wingspan or whatever it is, then I'd probably be in the NBA too.
You know, but my point of the matter is, it's showing a guy hit open jumpers in an empty gym is not. I'm not going to be impressed by that. You know, it's like. I saw Jimmy Butler hit 14 three-pointers in a game before Memphis, before he played Memphis in a pregame warm-up. 14 in a row. You know, Jimmy Butler was about a 30%, 33%. 30%. When a game's on and there's people out there and, you know, contesting shots, it's a lot different ball game, you know. So,
completely agree. I saw Ben Wallace drill a ton of threes in a row in his Bulls years, so, and warm-ups. I couldn't even hit a free throw, and he still hit like 6-7 threes in a row once I was there. So,
I know.
You know, it happens. I agree. I don't take much of whatever these videos show right now, but you know, I don't particularly root for him. I don't care. I care more about Mo Bamba than DeAndre Ayton. Like, I don't know any of these guys. So, yeah, it's great. And in the general, I hope everyone has good vibes. Thing, sure. I hope Mo Bamba does well, but. You know, I'm going to root for whoever the Bulls draft. After that, I really don't care what happens to any of those people.
Amen.
You know, I was rooting for the 76ers to keep Brian Colangelo just so their team would fall apart. You know, everyone's like, oh, great, they got rid of him. Like, ah, I wish he stayed. That would have just been great. LeBron wouldn't have gone there for sure then. You know, so.
That's one more topic, though, I did want to touch on this. I kind of felt bad for the guy. I really felt like when you found out it was his wife, Doug. I mean, like, you don't talk about work with your wife. You don't,
dude. He completely knew what was going on, completely. So I don't know how closely you follow this, but a couple of things that are the complete damning facts. Within 2 hours of them telling Brian Colangelo that, like, hey, this account is linked to this account, all the accounts were shut down. So if his wife was doing it, he was aware of it. Because within 2 hours, all the accounts were dead. Like, if he had no idea what was going on, it's not like it would have been like, oh, hey, honey, are you running 5 Twitter accounts? Like, no. That wouldn't be the first thing you would come up with. 2, she has an iPhone, and they showed the tweets were coming from an Android. So you already know that she wasn't doing all the tweeting. I mean, he clearly knew what was going on. And, you know, whether it was his dad, whether it was him, whether it was his son, like, whatever her, I mean, clearly... It was not just his wife, and clearly he had knowledge.
Well, I think a lot of it was his wife. From what I've read and heard, and what the Sixers have said, she was the source of most of those tweets. And, yeah, that happens. People talk about their jobs, especially someone who's a wife.
But proven that's not true, because they showed the tweets coming from an Android, which his wife does not have.
How do you tell if
it's just an iPhone? Because it shows, if you look at the Twitter, there's a Facebook post about it. It shows tweeted like from Android, like, and like the tagline or whatever. So it clearly was not just his wife. And the fact that they were shut down immediately means if it was his wife, he knew his wife was doing it.
Well, yeah,
and
probably
tacitly endorsing it.
Well, he probably
so either way. And this dude, he got his whole job through nepotism. Like, he never earned anything. And he was running the franchise into the ground. So, no, I don't feel bad.
He wasn't running it into the ground.
He wasn't
running it into the ground. How did he run it into the ground? What did he do that was so awful?
He traded number 3 to get Markelle Fultz, who looks like a huge bust pick, to do it.
He still drafted Simmons. He still, you know, signed J.J. Redick.
He drafted Simmons, like the most obvious draft pick ever. It's like giving the Bulls credit for drafting Derrick Rose. Actually, the Bulls deserve a little more credit for drafting Derrick Rose, only because Michael Beasley was actually something many people thought was a good pick. There was like no one else in that draft besides Simmons. No one else. He was such a consensus number one. A blind monkey would have picked Simmons. That you get no credit for that. None.
I agree. But I thought some of the pickups that he did in the market this year. J.J. Redick was a nice signing. Some of the players he did. I understand. I'm not trying to say, hey, this guy's the greatest. But I do.
Trading up for Fultz was just a train wreck pick.
That was a terrible move.
A terrible, terrible decision.
A lot of people love Fultz, so he wasn't the only guy. Not trading
Okafor earlier when those guys had a little more value and hanging on to them. I don't know. Whether you think Colangelo is a good GM or not, clearly still got his job completely through nepotism, through his dad. Got forced onto the team by you know, the NBA. I don't know. There's no part of me that feels sympathy. I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
No part.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Android iPhone is a pretty good one. I hadn't seen that, so I will give you that. But I do also feel that I do know, you know, a wife who's trying to defend her husband. It's hard to control somebody like that. And that's,
if he really didn't know, then I would feel some sympathy.
There you go.
It's just I don't believe that at all. So in that sense of what your point's trying to get out, completely valid. I talked to my wife about work. If she went off and did a bunch of stuff and I had no idea, you know, I would feel like what the hell. So if that was actually the story, I would have some sympathy for him. It's just that the facts don't align in such a way that I can possibly believe that that's true.
Good one, Doug. You did a good, very good argument there, and you kind of turned me around on it somewhat. Somewhat. I still feel
all
fun.
Right. Yes.
All right. On that note, we're going to pull the big red bus in and sideline it. Let's get the info out for the draft party again. Are we filled? Are we 100% there? No more info out? Or what's the story?
I don't know. I keep thinking like, what the heck? If a couple more people want to go, squeeze them in. You know, so if someone wants to make it, I'm sure we can maybe squeeze one or two more guys in. I think we're at right around the fill mark. But you know, probably some people will cancel at the last second. Decide, wow, I'm just going to go meet a stranger on the internet that I heard in a podcast and go to their house. That's weird. I'm not going to show up. You know, that kind of thing tends to happen with some frequency at these types of events. So if you want to go, we'll make it work.
Sounds good, brother. It sounds good. So, yeah, if anybody's interested, email us, ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com, or on Twitter you can find Doug_Tonus. It's THONUS. Or you can always reach out to me at CBE Fred. Search for C Red Fred, you'll find it. Until next time, and we will have a show next weekend as we get closer, a little bit more in depth with some of these prospects. I want to focus a little bit more on 22. I'll throw a couple names for you this week, and we'll do some film work on it. And until next time, all the best to you, my friend, and look forward to the next exciting The Big Red Bus.
Can't wait.
All right, brother. Have a good one, my man.
You too.
Bye-bye.